Hello, everybody, and happy Sunday. It is so great to see you. I don't say this, pastors don't tend to say this very much, but I love being the pastor here. Like, love it beyond what you could know, okay? It's been like the thrill of my life, so I just want to let you know that. Today, we're going to look at two sections of scripture out of Luke chapter 9. They are all about two things, the giant lunch and the right side up kingdom. And we're going to get right after it. And you'll see why that's the title. Let's start with a giant lunch. I want to read Luke chapter 9, verses 12 through 17. Late in the afternoon, the 12 came to him and said, "Send the crowd away so they can go to the surrounding villages and countryside and find food and lodging, because we're in a remote place here." Jesus replied, "You give them something to eat." They answered, "We have only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, unless we go and buy food for all of this crowd," which is about 5,000 men were there. Sorry for the patriarchy, they only counted the guys back then, so it was probably a crowd of over 10,000. But he said to his disciples, "Have them sit down in groups of about 50 each." The disciples did so, and everyone sat down. The king, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke them. Then he gave them to the disciples to distribute to the people. They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of pieces that were left over. Cool story. Let me say a few things about this. First of all, this story of the giant lunch is a symbolic thing. There were 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish in this sack lunch, symbolizing, many theologians believe, the 5 Old Testament books and the 2 tablets containing the 10 Commandments that Moses had given the people. So it appears that Jesus was letting these people know through this miracle that he was a new spiritual leader that was going to take them into the next era of their journey with God. So that's pretty cool. The second thing about this giant lunch story, it's a miraculous thing. I want to share a few things about miracles. First of all, they don't happen all the time, okay? That's why they're called miracles and not commons, all right? They happen just every once in a while, but they do happen. Believing in miracles can make your journey of following Jesus a wee bit awkward at times. Let me explain why I say that. Because you probably have friends that know you go to church, and maybe they've asked you about your faith, or maybe they've asked you, "Hey, I know you go to church. Well, what do you do there?" And your reply is something like this: "Well, we sing out loud in public, okay? We pray to a God we can't see. We study a book that's over 2,000 years old. We greet and even hug each other, even if we don't know the people. And to top it all off, we read about and actually believe in the miraculous." And it can get awkward in that little moment, okay? This is why some people try to ignore and explain away miracles, because that way their whole church faith thing seems a little bit less fantastical to their friends. And I get it. But I do believe in miracles for several reasons. First of all, because life on earth is just that mysterious and unpredictable. There's so much more to life on this planet than what we can see and prove in an equation. I love this phrase, "All there is never all there is." And that's so true about life in our world. The second reason I believe in miracles is because I believe in a God that's much bigger than us. Much, much bigger than us. In the Old Testament book of Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah compares our thoughts and God's thoughts to being so far apart that God's thoughts are so much higher, it's the distance between one side of the universe and the other. Well, we now know through science that the distance between one side of the known universe, just the known part, and the other part is 93 billion light years. You probably can't register how far that is. Trust me, you can look it up. It's super duper far, farther than you can even wrap your mind around, okay? So as author Mark Battison recently said in his book, he said, "You could say that your best thought on your best day is 93 billion light years short of what God could have came up with." And that is so true, all right? God is way bigger and way greater than us. Homer Simpson, the brilliant theologian, said in one episode of The Simpsons, I'll put his quote on the screen, he was looking at this humongous church, and then he said, well, I don't know much about God, but I have to say we built a pretty nice cage for him. I don't know, maybe that's like pastor humor, but I thought that was tremendous. Sometimes we do try to put God in a cage, though. We try to domesticate and tame God. We try to convince ourselves that God is just like us. But God is not just like us. God is beyond us, bigger than us. And God can do things that we simply can't. Miraculous things, like singing creation into existence out of nothing, raising the dead, healing the sick, just to name a few. If we reject the idea of the miraculous and try to explain miracles away, we are essentially trying to shrink God down to something our minds can completely comprehend. And at that point, you're not dealing with God at all. Because the true God I've discovered and continue to discover in my life is shrink resistant. That's what God is. The last reason I believe in miracles is because of this. Life is actually full of miracles when you stop and actually think about it and study it. I'll give you some examples. You probably don't know this, but each of us have a unique sweat print. Did you know that? Just like we have a unique fingerprint, there are 330 some odd chemicals in the body that make up human sweat. And in every person's body, those chemicals are combined in a slightly different way. So not one person on the billions of people on planet Earth has the identical sweat to another person. That's miraculous. I'm sorry, but that's miraculous when you think about it. Or how about the Earth? It spins, this one freaks me out. I can't think about it too much. It spins right now at 1,000 miles an hour. And while it's hurtling through space at 67,000 miles an hour, and yet we don't get dizzy or fly off into outer space. One of my worst nightmares, by the way, okay? That's miraculous. And in your own body right now, this one, oh, I love this. There are roughly, in most people's human bodies, 330 billion cells that will recycle themselves on a daily basis. 330 billion cells will die in your body and be replaced by 330 billion new cells. So the process of death and resurrection, which we celebrate at Easter every year, happens every day in our own bodies. That's miraculous. And then there's your heartbeat. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm just going all nerdy on you today, but I can't help this. Every time your heartbeat, roughly 6 quarts of blood are pumped through 60,000 miles of veins, arteries, and capillaries, which is roughly 2 times around the globe, and it happens with every time your heart beats. That's miraculous. No wonder Albert Einstein said this, there are only 2 ways to live your life. One as if nothing is a miracle, and the other as if everything is a miracle. And I choose to live in the latter way. I choose to believe that everything is a miracle because it makes life more fun. I was in an acting class in college and I loved it. I actually didn't want to go into ministry. I thought going into acting or teaching would be fun, but God had other plans, evidently. But I acted out one part of Lewis Carroll's classic Through the Looking Glass, if you've ever, you know, experienced that or watched that play. And there was this one interaction between two characters, Alice and the White Queen. And Alice says this, "One can't believe in impossible things." And the White Queen has the best reply to her. The White Queen says, "I dare say you haven't had much practice. When I was your age, I did it for a half an hour every day. Why, sometimes I believed in as many as 6 impossible things before breakfast." Don't you love how she's living her life? She chooses to believe in the miraculous, and that's more fun. All right. The last thing I want to mention about the story of the giant lunch is this. It was a community thing. Notice something in this story. Yes, Jesus was the one who miraculously multiplied the food in this tiny sack lunch so it fed thousands and there were even leftovers. But when you look at verse 16, it says the disciples gave the food to the people and then they were believed to have passed it to each other. Now Jesus could have pulled off this miracle all by his onesies without the disciples or any of the people's help. He could have prayed over the sack lunch and suddenly food could have appeared in front of all the thousands of people that were gathered there, but he didn't do that. Instead, he made sure the people were involved in the process of this miracle. They participated in the miracle by passing the food. I love that, and I love that for us. God is always looking for partners. I've told you that before. God is always inviting us into what God is up to in the world, which is just so great, because that means we get to be an integral part of the miracle of spreading God's love to other humans. That is so great. I'm so happy to be a part of that. I told you in last week's sermon that I spent some time just for fun looking up people's mottos, like business mottos, some state mottos, mottos for life, and it was really interesting and kind of funny, and I came up with a few more, and I'll tell you why I'm saying this in just a moment. I want to list three for you. Here's the first one. One day or day one, it's your decision. Isn't that a great, okay, some of you that's over your head because it's too early in the morning, even at 11:30, okay, but one day or day one, you decide. That's so great. The second one I particularly love, life is short, buy the ice cream. Isn't that a good life motto? And number three, whatever you do, always give 100% unless you're donating blood, which is also a good motto. But I think a great motto for every follower of Jesus are these words: God's love, we deliver. And that's actually the name of an organization on the East Coast that delivers food to people that have illnesses and just came out of the hospital. God's love, we deliver. But I want to adopt that as like a life motto. Isn't that great? All right, let's move on to the right side up kingdom. Jesus says two things in chapter 9 that show how different God's kingdoms and God's ways are from the kingdom and ways of this world. The first one's in Luke 9:24, and I'll pop that up on the screen. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will save it. Okay? And the second one's found in verse 48. We can pop that up there. Next slide. There you go. For who is, it's not supposed to say Lisa. Stupid autocorrect, I did this with my voice. It's supposed to say, for who is least among you will be the greatest. Not who is Lisa among you will be the greatest. Dang it. Is there any Lisas in the audience right now? Okay, because that would be just epic, all right? Okay. Whoever is least among you will be the greatest. Kristen and I both didn't catch that. That was my fault. Sorry. Now, both of these sayings in Luke chapter 9 seem upside down, but they're really right side up. Let's talk about saving life first, okay? Our world is full of idols. Not necessarily the kind you carve out of wood like you see in the movies, but other kinds. Things like beliefs and ways of living that go against the flow of what God wants for our humanity. Things that somehow steal our affection away from God. Those kind of idols. In our country, we know this, we bow down to the idol of acquisition on a daily basis. We've been tricked into thinking that life is all about getting more and having more. More stuff, more money, more power, more influence, more followers on social media, more knowledge, more toys. The list goes on and on and on. A pastor that I've read many of his books, I was reading his blog the other day, and he said he woke up not long ago, it was during last football season, on a Saturday, and he was channel surfing on his way to ESPN because he wanted to watch College Game Day and some football. And he came across a Christian television station, which he doesn't watch a lot of. But he stopped on it because something got his attention. The star, which was a pastor of the show, was promoting a new sermon series, and it was called this, You Can Have It All. And if you ordered the sermon series, because you had to buy it, included was a book, I think it was written by the same man, called How to Be a Millionaire God's Way. Can we just pause for just a second and allow Jesus to throw up, okay? Can we just do that right now, all right? Because I read that and I thought, wow, the idol of acquisition has even wriggled its way into the church. That's so sad. But Jesus tells us, And he lets us know in this saying that life isn't found in the getting, in the acquisition. Life's found in the giving, to give ourselves over to him, to give ourselves over to other people in love by our acts of kindness and service. That's where the life is. And that's so true. Now, the next statement, the least is the greatest. I'm going to show you two houses. Evidently, this is a thing in the world because there's a lot of examples. People are building their houses upside down. I don't know why. And these are expensive houses, by the way. These are really nice houses. And I looked at those and I thought, no, that's not right. I mean, that's the first thing you think, right? That's not okay. You have to wonder if that's what the people who originally heard Jesus say the phrase in Luke chapter 9, that the least among you is the greatest. You have to think that's probably what they were thinking. The least among us is the greatest? No, you got that wrong, Jesus. In the prior verses, the disciples were actually arguing about which one of them was the greatest in the group. And Jesus read their mind and probably thought them to be ridiculous. So he had a little kid stand beside him and said, "The least of you among you is the greatest." And then the Gospel of Matthew records that he went on to say, "And whoever humbles himself like this little child is the greatest." Little kids are sticky and needy. Have you noticed that? I'm just being honest, and we've raised kids, and it's true. They're just always sticky. Like, you grab their hand when you go pick them up at school, and you grab their hand and go, "Oh my gosh, what is on this?" You know, and they're needy. So why would Jesus want us to be like them? Why would his definition of greatness be a sticky, needy little kid? Let me offer a few thoughts. There are more that you could come up with, but let me offer a few. First of all, kids are not afraid to ask for help. They don't let pride get in their way most of the time. So I think greatness, according to Jesus, is not a person that says, "God, I've got this life thing all handled by myself. I don't need your help. I can take care of myself." No, I think greatness in the mind of Jesus is the person who isn't afraid to say, "God, I'm in way over my head. Help. Help me now. Help me lots." That's why author Anne Lamott says the word "help" is one of life's three greatest prayers, along with the words "wow" and "thanks." And I happen to agree with her. Also, little kids, I think the reason they're great is because they like recess. I loved recess when I was a little kid. I was a very active child. Imagine that, okay? A very active child. And then I remember going, I didn't go to middle school. We had junior high. And I remember going from sixth to seventh grade, and one of my friends looked at me and said, "You know, there's no recess over there in that building. There's not even a playground." And I thought, no, I was abhorred. Do you remember that? I thought, how am I going to make it through the day? Now, it turns out we had breaks, and so we kind of made our own recess out of the breaks and the lunch breaks, but there was no playground. Oh, I truly believe in my heart of hearts that Jesus defines greatness as a person who is actually willing to purposely step out of the rat race and stop working and play, go to recess. No wonder the prophet Zechariah, when he was talking about the glorious future of what God was going to bring to the city of Jerusalem, included these words: "In the city of Jerusalem, the streets will be filled with boys and girls playing there." God's plans for us include play. They include joy. They include recess. So here's another motto for you that comes from Steve Jobs: "Stay hungry, stay foolish." Let's ask God to help us be childlike, to be people who are never afraid to look foolish, to be people who play, who have recess, because according to God, that's greatness. We're going to end our service today. Maria is going to give some announcements in a moment, but first, Lori, could you come on up here, and I'll get the mic for you. Lori's going to lead us in a short spiritual practice, and then Mariah will close us with a couple of announcements. Take it away.
Hi, everybody. My name is Lori, and hi. I loved that. Oh, hi. And one of the things, a couple of things that I've loved about this church since I've been coming here for about a year is that Tim gives this time at the end for us to zero in on something and think about it and respond to God. That was new for me. I'd never done that before in a church before. And then the other thing that I like is sometimes when the person's up here and they do that, they lead us in a group prayer reading something from the ancients. You know, somebody a long time ago prayed something, and that always makes me feel so connected to people through the years that have the same God that we do, you know. And so anyway, that's what we're going to do right now. I'm going to zero in a little bit and talk about a miracle of an acquaintance of ours that we had that happened to them, because it helped me in my faith. And then we're going to read a ancient prayer together and ask God for some miraculous stuff in our world. But before I did that, I did want to just give a caveat or mention that I have been on that spectrum that Tim was talking about explaining miracles away in my life. I'm very, very much of that mind, you know, unless you can prove that it's not happened scientifically, I mean, that it happened, you know, apart from what we know about science, you know, I've explained it away. And so I just really appreciated that this morning. But I think I'm in good company, because I was thinking about Thomas, and he said, hey, you know, I'm not going to believe unless I see it and touch it, that science mind. And Jesus said, oh, okay, here, touch it. And so I think that's okay that we doubt, but I'm so glad that God does miracles so that it can rip that away from people like me, you know, so we can go, okay, God, you are still in the miracle business. So just wanted to share, I did reach out to him, this acquaintance of ours, Rebecca, in Portland, to say, hey, can I share this story of yours? And she said, oh, yeah. And I hadn't talked to her for like 15 years, so I was like, oh, this is kind of weird. But it was so cool, because she said, and when you hear the story, you're going to go, wow, that's crazy. She goes, oh, wow, I had totally forgotten about that. God did so many amazing things during that time. And I thought, you forgot about that? If I had had that happen to me, I would, like, you know, be making it go viral on that, you know. But so Dave and I were attending a church in Gresham that we were, in our 40s, we were some of the oldest people there. It was just full of 20-somethings. And a lot of them were couples, a lot were single. But there was this one couple, Rebecca and TC, and they were super involved in the church. TC was a Gresham police officer. He was second generation. And TC's younger brother, Bobby, went to that church. And he was engaged to this really fun gal named Laura. And we started going to the church, and I went to her bridal shower and got to know some gals. And Bobby and Laura got married. And not too long after that, Laura, who was a certified climbing instructor, she and her husband took her husband's brother, TC, out to a common spot in the gorge for beginning rock climbers. And Laura was going to teach TC how to rock climb. And Laura and TC both fell to their death. And it rocked our church. That's going forward. But just when it happened, I have to tell you something just crazy that God did. The folks came back, all the people gathered around, all the 20-somethings that were really good friends with all these folks gathered at Rebecca's apartment. She and TC had two little boys, and they were just crying, and Laura told the story, and she said, I just remember going, God, I don't know how to do this, and she was bawling and crying and screaming, you know, God, I just don't know how to do this. How am I supposed to live? And all of her friends were crying. And I think it's kind of ironic that Tim had that slide up there that shows how we put God in a cage that had that little parakeet in the cage, because my story is about a little parakeet in a cage. But she had a parakeet in her living room, and they were all in the living room for apartment, and they were crying. And when there was a moment of a break in the sound, after Laura had said, God, I just don't know what to do, her parakeet said, trust me. And they all stopped and whipped around and looked at this cage, and there's the parakeet, cheep, 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 cheep. And she said, so she had her own Balaam's donkey, if you guys are familiar with that story, right, from the Bible. God did something miraculous that can't be explained, right? And to me, that's the definition of a miracle, is something that God can do that we can't. As Tim said, there's so much. So I have a slide that I thought we could look at. So what we're going to do is, together, we're just going to read the prayer and ask God, if you feel like that's something you want to ask of God, and we're going to skip saying who it's from, and we're going to just go right into that last verse and say what the guy said who wanted to believe God, wanted to believe that Jesus was going to do a miracle for him, but he didn't, but he wanted to believe, so he asked Jesus to help him believe. Okay, let's read this together. We beseech thee, Master, to be our helper and protector. Save the afflicted among us. Have mercy on the lowly. Raise up the fallen. Appear to the needy. Heal the ungodly. Restore the wanderers of thy people. Feed the hungry. Ransom our prisoners. Raise up the sick. Comfort the faint-hearted. I do believe, Lord. Help me overcome my belief. Amen.